right, I will call to order this meeting of the Customer Service Committee, February 15, 2012. Roll call, please.
Committee Chair, Director Reddick.
Here.
Director Darcy.
Here.
Director Towns.
Here.
We have a forum.
Thank you very much. I'll take a motion for approval of the minutes of the committee meeting of December 14th, 2011.
So moved.
And I will second that. Are there any changes, deletions? Seeing none, all those in favor of approval of the minutes as submitted signify by stating aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, and those are passed. Moving into our presentation, I'll turn it over to Shauna.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
This presentation covers two main categories that we're excited to talk about with all of you today. The first one are the results of the focus groups. You might recall that we did a number of focus groups with both with all of representatives and groups of our drivers, iPad and non-iPad. And so we'll walk through that. And the other one are the results of the RFI, the request for information to date, where we're working to learn more about electronic tolling options from a technology and services standpoint in general, kind of refreshing our knowledge and trying to build on that for some of our upcoming strategies and procurements. So we'll walk through each of those, and the way that it's structured here in the slide is that we do a quick review of our work plan, and then for each of those two categories, we talk about kind of how the process has been set up, what some of the key results have been, and then we enter a key consideration slide where we can kind of talk through what that might mean for the future and how these results will help play into decisions we can make as a group, if that makes sense. But please feel free to let me know if you have questions at any point. Happy to address them. On slide two, which is where we start, and let me use this clicker, which helped me work. On slide two, we have a reminder of what our work plan was and what we kind of adopted as a group the other month. And that bottom one there is complete American Express fees. Very exciting that we have lower rates now. Those top three are in process and will be for some time, but we've learned some interesting things that we'll address regarding all of these today. The violations framework has to do with kind of how we handle violations from a fees perspective, a fines perspective. Our two-year look back, where we don't send a notice until you've had three violations in 2 years. How we handle collections after a certain amount of time, and just generally how all electronic tolling might work if we were to ever go that route. Fleet policies, how we handle fleets. Our system is, as I think we've discussed before, is largely set for individual drivers or families right now, and we would like to better serve fleets because they represent a big portion of our customer base. And feedback transponders, those famous beeping transponders that people so love. that is something that we would love to be able to offer our customers again. I don't know if anybody had any comments on the work plan or thoughts at this point. This was really just a reminder slide. Okay. Then let's talk about the focus group, which is the first set of slides. We conducted 10 sessions, mostly in November and December, and they were split between Chicago proper and some of the surrounding suburbs. And we did cover various types of drivers. So iPass customers who've had violations, iPass customers who have not had violations, drivers who have become iPass customers. So they started out in the manual lanes and they've moved into the iPass customer category. Largely because they receive violation notices and want to avoid them. Drivers who use the manual lanes that have not received violation notices, truckers and fleet company managers, and then regional office managers for rental car companies. So a wide variety and actually very good participation. Our approach was to partner with the University of Illinois at Chicago. They do a lot of this focus group work, and they were able to lead this in a very kind of professional, methodical way for us. Each of the groups had between 5 and 10 participants, and we drew the participants from a sampling of our iPath database, if they were iPath, And we recruited the other drivers through the website postings, including, I believe, they used Craigslist, which is something these focus group team at UIC does when they're really looking for people that they can't sample from the database. There was a single moderator for all of them and a one-way window for us to observe. The next couple of slides talk through the key themes that came out of these focus groups. And again, stop me if you hear anything interesting or need a clarification of any sort. The first one is that open road tolling was perceived as an important benefit to all drivers. So even our drivers who use the manual lanes exclusively really like open road tolling. They feel that it's improved their driving experience. Thought that was great. Most iPath customers are unaware of toll rates. That was interesting. Most of them had a very hard time articulating what they were actually paying for the daily commute. They said, I get the iPath, I see it replenished, I'm good to go. Most first-time recipients of a violation notice do not fully understand how violations were incurred, kind of how they got that notice, until they work to resolve the notice. Once they've resolved the notice, they seem to be able to talk through the highlights of our violations process, but they said that they had no idea why they got the notice to begin with in almost every case. Drivers do not understand our 3 violations in 2 year policy. I don't think that's a huge surprise. Most would prefer immediate notification or some sort of monthly notification or invoice. Drivers strongly believe that violation fines are excessive, the $20.
Yeah, I thought this was interesting, and I know the session that I sat in on, Paula and I both commented because she was there too watching it, and people don't see, you know, they see things like speeding fines and running a stop sign fines as a deterrent, and they understand the safety and other, you know, reasons to have a fine as a deterrent, but they don't, you know, kind of make the same correlation with the fines for our violations, which we thought was interesting. And I think that might have even been a session.
That was one of the suburban ones.
But was it I can't remember whether it was a session of people who just had never received violations before, but just, you know, had heard about the process. I think that it might have been people who had not received violations.
Then there are 2 customer service experience bullets here at the bottom. First one is that for individual drivers, the experiences that they express to us with our customer service, kind of calling in or visiting one of our customer service centers, was somewhat mixed. Some of them said it was a great experience, very pleasant. Some of them said, you know, I still don't understand your fines process, and I found it very unpleasant to talk about it. For our fleet drivers, customer service experiences were overwhelmingly negative. One of the things that we did hear from the fleet drivers, we had always known that it was difficult for fleets to deal with our violations, because if you have a ton of cars and you're getting a stack of violations and you're getting new ones on top of the old ones every, you know, 14 to 21 days, it gets hard to manage. It's a lot of paper. What we didn't really fully understand, or at least I didn't, I should say, until I listened to these discussions, was that even if you're actively managing your account, you're avoiding violations as a fleet manager, it's hard to call in and work with our process, because all of the security questions we ask and the way that our account maintenance is set up is more for a family or an individual, where we have people calling in from different corporate offices around the country, and they say, well, my name is such and such, my address is such and such, and the credit card on the account is probably X, Y, or Z corporate card. But
or they don't even know.
Or they don't know, right. So it's hard for them to access the account to even actively manage it.
And then for some fleets, I think we've found, I wasn't sitting in on that discussion, but just from other information, that when they, you know, there are the fleets that are, you know, trucking companies or commercial fleets, but there are also fleets where, you know, that violation should be assigned to someone else. So the enterprise car rentals of the world, or the car dealerships where you have loaner cars for customers. So, you know, I think just generally, certainly we're reinforced here that we need to figure out a different way to manage fleets, which we already kind of knew, but it was helpful, I think.
It was definitely reinforced. On this next slide, we have some more kind of themes that came out of this. Most drivers prefer electronic communications to traditional mail. There were a handful of people who said they would like to get their violations by email, but of course DMVs don't have email addresses, so that's not possible, but certainly there are opportunities to step up electronic communications in the future. Most drivers would like the option to dispute online and by phone, so we have in the last year put into place a dispute practice online for images, but we would very much like to expand that for other things. Things like, this car was stolen, and I'd like to go online and submit my documentation to indicate as much. Most drivers would prefer transponders that confirm toll payment at the time of transaction, the beeping transponders. Not a surprise, but every group brought it up. Most drivers would like an improved online map to determine required tolls on different routes, which I know we're working on already. Many drivers worry about the use of transponder data to track their location or their speeding. And most drivers do not understand what their tolls fund. Most of the participants thought that we get tapped dollars and the tolls are on top of that. And or
that it's another tax and just
go in the general fund. And then here at the bottom, and this is very interesting to us, some regular drivers that drive the road on a regular basis, make the informed choice.
3 to 4 times a week is how many of them described it.
And as much as, and I guess, as much as the I-PASS drivers are driving.
Right.
Like there was great parity in the number of times that an I-PASS and a non-I-PASS user reported using our tollway on a regular basis. So they choose to use these manual lanes as informed choice. And they perceive themselves as irregular or infrequent drivers, but really they're driving as much as our I-PASS customers, and they are choosing the manual lanes anyway. And they're choosing to pay more.
A couple of these individuals who described themselves this way actually said that if we went to all electronic toll collection, then obviously they would get an I-PASS. So it was interesting that they described themselves as infrequent users.
Maybe they don't have a charge card. Is that something that could impede somebody from getting an I-PASS?
Well, you can get an I-PASS with cash. And you can
continue to load your cash. It does require more active management, though. I mean, it's not an auto replenish. You have to kind of stay on top of it and what the balance is and make sure that you're replenishing with cash. But it is something that we do allow. It didn't seem some.
That was not the biggest barrier.
Yeah.
They all
put their perception that they didn't really need to. It wasn't the inconvenience of using manual wasn't enough for them.
There was a lot of talk among the two groups about not wanting the headache of managing another account. They said, I already have my cell phone account, I have my water bill, they said it's just one more thing, and it's one more thing that would be attached to my bank account, it's one more thing that I would have to deal with if something went wrong. If I pay cash, I know I paid, they know I paid, it's done. It's interesting. I mean, they're choosing to do it. This is not a bunch of It's not a bunch of out-of-state people who are here once. So out of this came some future considerations that we could talk to as a group as we try to think forward into what we'd like to do with our violations framework, our fleet policies, and our feedback transponders. Those kind of three areas that we said as a group we'd want to address. In terms of violation framework, coming out of this process, we would want to consider eliminating the 3 violations in 2 years policy and instead consider issuing violations in bundles, you know, every time you hit 4, every time you hit 5, whatever it might be, and or kind of every month.
Yeah.
Well, right, so you don't let somebody go forever because they've
never tried.
For
the equivalent of 2 years.
Right. Reducing initial fines. So we say initial here, reducing them and instead considering charging a nominal convenience fee of sort for that first notification so that people don't feel as if the first time they hear from us they're being hit with the full force of our power, that they are being asked to please pay your tolls, here's a convenience fee for the fact that we had to hunt you down and you know, mm-hmm. go back and forth with you with all this paper and phone calls. So please just pay the toll.
So in the broader industry, sometimes I hear this referred to as treating everybody as a potential customer
yes.
instead of treating people as a violator, at least from day one. Some people will choose to continue to be violators, but at least opening with the idea that they would be, you know, it's another potential customer and, you know, there's some type of surcharge, obviously, for, again, as you said, it's going to be more costly for us to send somebody a bill on a monthly basis. But, you know, it does change the dynamics. So just wanted to kind of think through or have some discussions around whether we thought that was something worth exploring. Obviously, we need to look at how that impacts our revenue. You know, those violation fines do allow us to recover some of the costs for the tolls that we ultimately don't collect. So we would need to look at all of those things. But if that generally seems like a logical kind of next step for the Illinois tolling.
To that end, you know, I think if we take a look at our work plan and the time frame that we put together, I think it's kind of important that today we give staff a little bit of feedback so that we can start getting some, at least get it into the drafting mode and the evaluation. I very much echo Christy's thoughts about viewing people more, we need to be more customer friendly, viewing people as potential customers or current customers that have had issues, versus I think the way that we evaluate this. And I think that, you know, on page 5, the focus group results indicate that the system as it currently stands is deemed to be pretty punitive in nature. At least whether it's real or perception, it doesn't matter. It's what we have to deal with. After going through this, and Sean has got there's a lot of other additional information, my thought is I'd like to take a look at a system where there's an initial contact after a violation or some threshold of violation where perhaps we're reaching out to them and signing them up as customers versus the cost that goes into the fines and the convenience or usage cost. If we can get some investment in our system going forward, now obviously, you know, we've got a $20 fine, but if we could get them to make a $40 investment, put, you know, get on the transponder system, make that investment, there may be a long-term, may create a lot more long-term financial health for us and for them. That's kind of, you know, where I'd like to see this go. And I do think the two-year look back, it's just hard.
It is.
You know, you get something. I mean, I don't know what I did last week, and 2 years ago I drove through, and I would blame my wife, but I mean, you know.
A lot of people do. You'd be surprised which calls we get.
That part's not going to be on the internet, right? Now that I've said it out loud. But directors, I mean, that's kind of my thought. Yeah. I don't know what you guys think. Or
well, I agree with you. And this 2 year look back is another IRS.
No, I was originally it went into these focus groups kind of being concerned that if we change this violation process that, you know, we'd have to do a whole another series of customer education and it was really going to be onerous for us. But given how few people, even the ones who had actually gone through the process, really understood some of the policies around it, including this 2 year look back, I think that we run very little risk of kind of that education or re-education of customers. Yeah. It's pretty amazing. So
I like the idea of instead of a big crack in the beginning, the idea of offering them the opportunity to become a customer. Instead of paying that big violation, why don't you go ahead and, you know, get an iPass right now, we'll send it to you. Instead of a $20 fine, put in $40, we'll make you a customer with friends forever. Mm-hmm. Nice second box to paying a $20 fine and a $1.10 or whatever
yeah.
right. the toll might have been. And maybe we'll get some customers that way.
But we can go back and evaluate, and we'll take a look at the finance. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be an important overlay to the discussion. But I think it's a natural transition point now as people in the region generally are familiar with open road tolling and understand the difference between these lanes versus the manual, that we start to kind of think a little differently about how we can work with them.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Good.
Well, that takes us to fleet policies. we definitely want to configure the next system. This system is a little set in stone when it comes to how the account is structured. But the next one will have a lot more flexibility. And we'll want to allow for different security rules and account access capability for our fleet in a newer system. But even before we get to a newer system, we would like to consider establishing a fleet group to handle at least the key large accounts so that they have a point of contact, they have someone to talk to, and a group of people who are truly educated in not only fleets, but an actual set of people that they interact with, a relationship.
So,
key person to
under the current system, kind of a practical approach to doing this in the short term, we would only be able to do it through a point of contact reference that would be independent or separate for fleet customers versus individual customers. Is that what you're?
I don't know if I.
That there'd be a special customer instead of, obviously when we build a new system, there could be special tools or provisions within the new system and computerized, you know, ways of managing fleet accounts, right. But in the kind of a bridge solution, just creating these account managers.
Correct. Basically. A little more like in the insurance industry, maybe. You have, you know, a point of contact that you always reach out to when you're managing your insurance, if it's a whole group that helps you.
Where is the cutoff on a large account?
Good question. You have to figure that out.
0 to 50, is it? And, you know, how many segments? How many do you have over 500? How many do you have over 300, 200? Maybe we find out where that happy median is.
Is there a scenario where a private individual, I mean, is there one differentiation here that's private individual versus a commercial or a business concern?
You know, like, I've got probably 150 at each store.
Yep.
And I think they've got to be connected to a license plate, mm-hmm. which is really hard.
That's one of the hardest things to manage.
I drive three different cars a week. I'm throwing
Correct.
That thing on the dash and hoping
it.
You know, I pay for it. I'm sure that the toll's getting charged, but it's not exactly the rule. Mm-hmm. You know, so a fleet customer.
Pretty sure they're bringing up a violation right now.
I am a customer, and this is the conversation. Mm-hmm. I'm part of your customer mm-hmm. base when it comes to that.
Yes,
so, like, I've got a guy that comes in and consults with me every 3 months, and he rents a car at the airport, and I want to give him a transponder so that he's not paying tolls. Because he goes from me to a guy in Indiana, and I said, well, this could be convenient, but he's tried to buy one, but he's from Texas, and, you know, it just doesn't fit. So if I give him one, then he's got to call and give you the plate number. It's got to become more user-friendly for somebody that's got 100 transponders. We keep track of where they're at, but it's really hard to continue to communicate which exact car that transponder's in.
But all of those transponders, are registered to your company, not to you as an individual.
Right, my company.
Okay. So maybe it's, again, this difference between Terry Darcy as an individual who lives at whatever your home address is versus, you know, Darcy Buick or whatever the, mm-hmm. you know, corporate entities are. UPS, FedEx,
so
Enterprise.
If it's an FEIN number versus a Social Security number, it's a business versus a person. So there's a distinguishing opportunity right there to put that into a separate type of category,
right?
Whether it's 3 or 100, you know.
So we do or don't currently keep FEIN numbers.
No, not security is the main concern. We are actually.
Well, let's look at it. I think we can look at a different identifier than the current one. So
sure.
What identifier can we use that multiple people within a company would be able to, if you're doing any kind of account management or invoicing or, you know, financial work for company, you would have access to the FEIN number. Okay.
That is true. I'm taking notes. So this is helpful feedback. Very helpful.
One of the things we talked about in the prepping, and I think this gets into the request for information that Sean is going to talk about in a little bit, is as we move into the next system, I think a more automated approach to the situation that you're describing, you know, whether it's an app that people can put on their phone for the switching over the use of this transponder is now going to be with license plate XYZ and then move it over for however long. I think if we're taking a customer service or a customer-based approach to this, that that's something we've got to account for going forward. And in the meantime, if it's a personal representative and how we can get to that communication is probably, you know, the short-term time frame.
Good point. Helpful. The last one here, with respect to feedback transponders, we are working and need to continue to push with the EasyPass group and CAPSH, our transponder kind of lane reader technology provider, to offer feedback transponders. They do not, they've not manufactured them in a number of years. They have updated their technology in between the time that we got those original ones and now, so they would have to restart the process of manufacturing them. But it's feasible, and it's been talked about, and we need to push very hard with both groups to make that possible. So we'll keep you updated as those discussions evolve.
But there are issues of compatibility, as you mentioned, with the lane equipment and whether, you know, what level of investment would be necessary to make sure that the system, that the feedback transponders worked on the system. So it's
because multi-protocol is another thing that everybody's trying to get, so that the EasyPass group could read tags and could have their tags read by, say, a Texas or a Florida or a California, because they use different types of lane technology. But it's what everybody's trying to figure out is, can you have both? Can you have feedback and multi-protocol? Do you have to choose between the two? We don't think you'll have to. And just from what we're seeing and what we're hearing about the testing, but
is that one of the reasons?
A complication.
Is that one of the reasons that we can't run these on the west coast, west of the river?
Correct. They're different lane technologies. They do not read one another's transponders.
And it's even beyond the technology. I mean, the big challenge to what they call interoperability is there are technology issues, but those can be often worked out. It's, you know, getting into we are members of a network of, you know, multiple different toll agencies across 14 states, where we actually agree that there's this reciprocity that one of our customers goes through your system, we will write you a check from their account here and make sure that you get that payment. So it's those types of agreements about how the accounts are managed and making sure that, you know, the states or the entities trust that they're actually going to get those payments, as much as it is technology, although it's both. But there are kind of two parts to the question. There's the technology part of the question, which we hope with multi-protocol readers and, you know, some other advances, we can overcome those. But it's also just managing and making sure that there's the right level of understanding and agreement in place that California can expect that they're going to get a check from us, and we can expect that we're going to get a check from California.
How many toll systems are there in our country?
There are hundreds of little ones, like a bridge.
Yeah, but I mean, like...
I don't want to give you the wrong number.
I know.
We have 14 states, and I think in the IAG network there are 20...
It's like 26 or 27. 20,
yeah, in the IAG network. So that's just the EasyPass network. And then you have, I think, 5 or 6 different ones in Florida. We'll get back to you with the number.
My follow-up to that question, it's not necessarily have an answer to that, is
sure.
How many vendors provide the technology and the software for these systems? I mean, in my industry, there's about 2 big companies that handle 22,000 car dealers. There's about 20 of them that handle the rest of the 1,000 of them, you know. And I'm just wondering, at what point does the consortium of toll systems, and I know you're in one that's, what, 14?
Well, we're members of the IAG, but we also, I'm on the board of the IBTTA, which is basically the association, International Bridge Tunnel and Turnpike Association. But it's the International Association, yeah, the International Association of Tolling Entities. This is a very good transition question to the next segment of the presentation, too, but it's definitely something that there have been a couple of players. You know, it used to be maybe 4, now there's been some consolidation, who have really dominated, you know, the technology side of this industry. Now, though, as tolling and user fees are becoming more prevalent, I think we're starting to see different entities kind of, I won't say more mainstream, but, you know, entities that have typically done work in other areas where they have account management, you know, working with the credit card industry or working with, you know, other large companies who can be kind of the, can provide service for the back office management side. There's still only a set number of companies that can do the hardware out in the lanes or the equipment that we actually install on the roadways. But as far as kind of the back office, the computer system that manages it all and tracks the accounts and collects the revenue, that's becoming a much more diverse group as I think the toll industry starts to look at not just the typical toll industry providers that they've always looked at, but you know, there are a lot of firms and technology providers out there that have, you know, account management software and call center software and financial, you know, tracking systems and, you know, all of the components that go into an electronic toll system. Jump in if I'm saying something.
No, right on.
I don't mean to take us off track, but where do you feel our technology provider fits in the arena of all these vendors? Are they one of the big players? Or are they medium-sized? Are they somebody we've been with all the time, so we haven't looked at changing? Or
our current technology vendor is one of the big players in the electronic tolling world.
Are you talking about CAPS now? Or
I was talking
one?
About our lane and back office technology provider, ETCC, the Electronic Tolling Corporation. And they have a toehold in a number of the large tolling organizations around the country. That is starting to evolve. And although a lot of people are continuing to use their lanes and install new ones, it seems as if some people are starting to migrate away from their back office because there are some more sophisticated offerings coming onto the marketplace. But we'll learn more when we go through kind of formal procurement process for new back office technology ourselves. Because I think if we had spoken to the board a number of months ago, our current back office system, the lanes are okay. They need some refreshes and hardware refreshes and things like that. But the back office is bursting at the seams. It just wasn't built for this number of transactions. We're so much bigger than.
And it's not very flexible. If we want to change a business rule, if we want to say we don't want a 2-year look back anymore, we want to go to this invoice, we can't make that change.
Old-fashioned.
Right.
So there's just one box, and you really have no ability to.
Right, whereas
pretty limited.
You know, maybe there's an approach that allows you to have kind of component parts, and when there's a new industry innovation, you take that one component out and put in the new innovation, but you don't have to change. That doesn't require, you know, changing everything else, so to speak. So, but it definitely gets to the heart of the procurement process that we're about to go through. That we've actually already started.
Right. Is this a good time to switch to the next section, or is there anything else to say about the focus group?
I think so.
The next couple of slides are, you're not, please don't feel like you should actually read carefully. They're tiny, and it's not really so much about what's on it. It's to give you a visual concept of the fantastic response we got to our request for information. So we put out a request for information saying, hey world, we want to know more about electronic tolling in general. And we gave them a number of different categories to respond in, and then we included a category called others, saying if you don't fit into any of these categories, still feel free to let us know if you have an electronic tolling service or offering that we should know about. So we had, I think it was 26 responses, yes, 26, and we are in the process of finishing our meetings with all 26 of them. Each of the vendors submitted written material and then came to meet with us for 1 or 2 hours and talk us through what they do in electronic tolling or what they offer. So the categories just listed among the top, and all those little X's are what each of those vendors responded in. Vehicle classification for electronic tolling, so knowing if you're getting a semi-truck versus a car. License plate imaging, we take photos of those license plates. That forms the basis of our capacity to go after a violator. We have to hunt them down through the DMV data. Electronic tolling transaction capture, knowing when a transponder has been read, hitting an account with that. Electronic tolling account management, we've talked about, bypass accounts. Video tolling account management, so that's something we don't do as a specific category, but that other organizations have done, where they said, don't worry about transponder, we'll capture your plate. Other organizations have done that. We wanted to at least put that on the board of things to learn about. Electronic tolling violation management, so that's the whole violations process. And then interoperability management, which Christy spoke to a little bit earlier about kind of how do you work with other tollways to share customers. And then the other category. So you can see, it's a great response. A lot of people, a lot of companies were interested in connecting with us. So on page 10, let me flip ahead here. We just talked a little bit about the approach to this. Again, they've submitted written responses. We've been meeting with them. We have three vendor presentations remaining. And each of these presentations is being conducted kind of across the departments here at the tollway. So you've cross-departmental participation, which is great. You get a lot of different types of expertise around the table. And they're really conversations with the vendors about industry-wide trends and kind of emerging or comparative technologies. So we want to hear from them what their experiences have been, why they're choosing to make the types of products that they're making or stick with the types that they have been making, whatever it may be. And we've learned a lot of interesting things about what we could consider as an organization, which we'll talk to a little bit here. On page 11 and 12, we talk about some of the, well, on page 11, we talk about speeds. Three major ones that, from a technology perspective, that we pulled together. First one is the back office technology, the technology that we're currently working to replace. Continues to evolve rapidly, and it falls into two major categories, which Chris spoke to earlier. First one is kind of smaller software companies that offer custom-developed tolling solutions, which is what we have right now, back office. There's also an emerging group of these larger software companies, the ones that you, with brand names you might recognize, that are starting to attempt development and long-term growth of more standardized tolling systems, and that draw on the leading practices of other industries. So instead of saying, well, this, you know, this is tolling software and this is how we've always done it, they say, this is business software, and this is how you can use it in the tolling industry. It's a different approach. Lane technology, we've had a number of vendors come to us to talk about their lane technology. It continues to evolve, but more on the margin. It's not making the leaps and bounds that you see the back office making. Some of the things we've learned is that the United States tolling organizations do prefer in-pavement vehicle classification. You might remember that the way that we know that it's a semi-truck versus a car is that it rolls over the loops in the pavement. And those loops and the interest loops in the pavement count how many axles they have. So that's something that you see all over the U.S. You don't necessarily see it in other parts of the world where they use laser.
But the laser we found to be less effective, particularly in inclement weather conditions.
Yes, and we've tested over and over again.
So one of the reasons it sounds like there are labor complications, particularly in Europe, that making changes in the pavement are much different than, you know, mounting different laser technologies above the road. So
they choose to live with a more difficult product.
Maybe less effective. Yeah. We don't have any of those considerations.
That was an interesting discussion, set of discussions that we had. License plate imaging remains difficult across jurisdictions. There were every organization that came to talk to us about license plate imaging talked about how it's very difficult to read plates that are red, like Missouri plates. There are certain plates produced with flatter or less shiny paint that are hard to read. There are a zillion conditions out there that make it hard to capture the right image. It's not easy.
Duplication of number over multiple plate types. We found this in Indiana, which you may recall. Even in Illinois, they have it, where you same number, but a different specialty plate type. So
that was just a reconfirmation of what we've always experienced, is that it's not easy to just capture a plate and find the person. It's a huge process, and it's not a guarantee. Fingerprinting technology is popular but not fully proven. The concept that